The Army has known for a few years now that its active duty and strength will have to get smaller. It's even announced the final number, 450,000. And sequestration, if it continues in fiscal 2016, will make things worse, putting the Army on a path to an active duty force of 420,000. But the decisions on which those cuts will come from and which bases are now out, and many lawmakers are suddenly up in arms. Mark Kansian is a senior advisor for the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former chief of the Force and Structure and Investment Division at the Office of Management and Budget. He writes in a recent commentary, the Army's taking the same approach to impending budget cuts that a private company might when its workforce gets too expensive. And Mark joins us now. Thanks very much for coming on, sir. Appreciate your time.
Great. Happy to join you.
And notably, the Army changed its plan a little bit between last year and the final decision last week. Originally, they were going to completely eliminate four brigades. This looks like more of a across-the-board downsizing. What should we read into that, if anything?
Well, the Army, I think, did a pretty thorough review, went base by base and made a lot of small cuts, so many bases lose something. When it came to the brigades, though, I think they made a judgment that it was better to keep some forces on particular bases rather than eliminate an entire brigade. So in two instances, up in Alaska and then down in Georgia, you see that they took a brigade and cut it basically by two-thirds, but left what they now call a task force on the base so that the unit would not disappear entirely.
And does that allow for example, if the politics of sequestration somehow changed or if there was a sudden strategic need for a bigger force, is that kind of thing something that would let them grow the Army again more readily?
It would. And I suspect that was one of their considerations, that if there were changes in the future and the Army were to grow back to a larger size, it would be very easy to take that task force and then turn it back into a brigade.
Given your experience from OMB, how hard is it in general to, you know, replace or regrow a force of 40,000 that's being cut here? How many years does that take? How much effort is involved if we needed to do it?
Well, during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Army expanded the active Army from about 480,000, and I think they peaked out at about 560,000. So that's about 80,000 spaces. And they did that over the period of a couple of years, but they concentrated a lot of that growth in the sort of 2006-2007 period of the surge. So it's certainly possible. There are inefficiencies to doing that, and you don't like to do it in a hurry, but it's implicit in our current strategy. The Army is getting much smaller. It's smaller than it was at 9/11. On 9/11, it was about 482,000. Now it's going down to at least 450, maybe even lower. So implicit in that is the requirement to regrow the Army if there are requirements larger than we are expecting.
As you noted in your commentary, Ray Odierno, the chief of staff, is nervous, to put it mildly, about going down to a level of 450 even, let alone 420. What risks do you see in going to even the 450 number?
Well, there are two, and General Odierno has clearly signaled his concerns about going down to that level. Now, he has been he hasn't got out in front of the president and said that he disagrees, but he's signaled a lot of concern and noted the risks. And he'll be retiring in a couple of months. It'll be interesting to see whether he becomes more direct in his comments once he's retired. But there are two basic risks involved in going down to 450. One is the risk in fighting major wars, something like Korea. If at a smaller active duty size, you have to rely more on the Guard and Reserves. Particularly, you have to rely more on Guard and Reserve combat units. There's a strong consensus that for logistics units, for support units, the Guard and Reserve can provide the quality that's needed on a timeline that's acceptable. There's a lot of debate about reserve combat units and how long they take and whether they can truly get up to the level of an active duty unit. The Guard argues that they can. Many active duty officers have concerns. When you go down to 450, you're going to depend on many of those units to fight the major conflicts. The other risk is in the day-to-day operations. You know, on any particular day, all of the military services, the Army included, has forces deployed doing things around the globe. Some of them are, of course, in Iraq and Afghanistan now. Some of them are in Kuwait, manning the bases there. You know, some of them are doing training exercises around the globe. We're rotating forces into Eastern Europe to reassure the European allies. We're conducting counterterrorism around the world. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and that puts stress on the force. For example, if you're going to keep, say, a brigade in Eastern Europe to reassure the European allies, you have to have a base of about four brigades to keep one continuously deployed, because you just can't send them to Eastern Europe and have them sit there, and they're going to be separated from their families. So it takes a base of about four to keep one deployed. As the force gets smaller, the number of these commitments that you can meet gets smaller without stressing the force. And when the force gets stressed, as we've seen over the last 10 years or so, you know, bad things happen. You get divorces, you get suicides, you get a lot of bad behaviors, and personal stress. So the thing about many of these commitments is they aren't driven by the Army. Many of them are driven by the circumstances that occur during during the course of events. Many of them are driven by the administration's policies. Something like Ebola, comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden the Army has to deploy 1,000 soldiers to Africa to meet that requirement. So these aren't entirely controllable, and General Odierno is rightly concerned that as the force gets smaller, the commitments may not get smaller, and therefore his force may get stressed as a result.
Right, and there are some other things that the Army does that aren't driven by the Army per se. For example, a lot of the executive agent functions that they perform on behalf of the other services, things like IT and logistics. Do you see, those joint functions that the Army is sort of a service provider for being hindered by this shrinkage?
Absolutely, and the Army points this out to the other services that they provide many joint services in a theater. For example, in Kuwait, they run the port facilities. So any Marine units that are there, any Air Force units that are there are using the Army port facilities. They provide a lot of theater logistics. In other words, if there's an air base in Qatar or in Kuwait, the logistics that are coming from the port up to the air base are being driven in Army trucks, or at least the Army is overseeing that flow. So that puts demands on the Army also.
The Guard and Reserve have drawdowns of their own, but nothing like the active duty force, I think. I mean, it's nothing near the sort of 20% cut that the active is going through right now. Is that going to change in the coming years, or can the Army not afford to let those reserve forces shrink anymore for the reasons that you cited before?
I don't expect them to come down as much. Certainly, as you say, they are not planned to come down as much as the active force. I don't expect them to come down as much for two reasons. One is strategic and the other is political. The strategic reason is, as we've discussed, they provide a backup to the active force and they're much less expensive. They're, in effect, an insurance policy. So because the world is uncertain, there's a strong desire to keep those forces relatively strong, and the cost of doing that is not nearly as high as for the active force. The political reason is that the reserves are very influential, particularly the Guard. The Guard, remember, is in every state. It's a state organization. If you were a Guard officer, your commission is signed by the governor. And as a result, they have links into every state delegation in the Congress, and those delegations watch very closely what happens to Guard and Reserve forces. So there's a natural or a political reluctance to cut those forces, even aside from strategic concerns. Now, the Army right now has a force structure commission going on. It's an independent commission to look at this balance between active and reserve, because over the last sort of year or two, as these drawdowns have taken effect, there's been a lot of internal discussion and disagreement, and sometimes very vehement disagreement about the balance. Should the reserves come down more? Can they really substitute for active duty forces? And the Congress therefore set up this commission to try to come to an agreement about what the right structure of the total Army should be. About 3 years ago, they did the same thing with the Air Force. That seems to have been fairly successful in the air, when the Air Force had the same sort of internal disagreements about the balance between active and reserve. And the hope is that the Army will, you know, be able to come up, or this commission will be able to come up with a set of recommendations that will, you know, both provide a substantive way forward and sort of solve the internal political disagreements. As I've noted to many of my staff and many of my colleagues, it's not like we're going to solve this problem. The tensions between regular forces and militia forces go back to the very beginning of the Republic. George Washington complained about the reserves. So it's not like this has just popped up. It flares up periodically, and the best you can do is manage it. But I think the desire now is to see if we can do a little better job with that.